Welcome to Responsible Management. This is a podcast for the Knowledge Transfer Network at the University of Bradford School of Management. My name's David Spicer. I'm the school's Director of Business and Community Engagement. Delighted to be hosting the podcast. I'm joined today by two great individuals to talk about social and sustainable entrepreneurship. Our first contributor is Stefan Lemke-Elms. Stefan is a serial social entrepreneur, a chef and co-director of Glassbreen, a non-profit social enterprise farm reimagining local food systems in Wales. His work as a social and sustainable entrepreneur has included auctioning celebrity shoes to raise money for children in Africa, work for the Eden Project, recycling discarded wellies left behind at Glastonbury through his charity Reboot, and he also established the Warren, the Sustainable Restaurant Association's best local restaurant in Wales in 2019-20. Professor Vadim Grinovich is our other contributor. Vadim is Professor of Entrepreneurship and Small Business Innovation here at the University of Bradford, where he's also head of the Research Cluster on Transformative Entrepreneurship and Small Business. Vadim's key expertise is in the field of academic entrepreneurship and innovation and in digitally enabled sustainable entrepreneurship. His research develops an inclusive approach which helps shed light on the nature and extent of entrepreneurial activities by academics with different intersectional profiles. So Stefan, Vadim, great to be talking to you today. So we'll kick off with a sort of an open question. Obviously, the theme of the podcast is broadly around responsible management. So what does that mean for you? If I can come to you, Stefan.
I would say that when running any kind of project, I think you have to think about all aspects, and that's like money is often the case, and then people, and then maybe the community you serve. So with social enterprises, you have to think of it as a holistic approach to everything that's involved with a project organization. So I think managing that project, you just have to think about planet, people, and money. And as long as you're like fairly equal in all those three things, I think you've got a good chance of it succeeding.
Thank you. And thank you, David, for your introduction. When I'm thinking about responsible management, I am thinking about people. I think people is the most valuable resource in any organizational setting. And working with people, understanding their aspiration and their needs is critical for any manager who is trying to instill a culture of responsibility and inclusivity.
Brilliant. Thank you both. So our focus is on social and sustainable entrepreneurship. I would imagine most of our listeners understand entrepreneurship, but what's distinctive? What's unique about being a social or a sustainable entrepreneur?
Well, I think coming from my history, I've always looked at business that has a social aspect to it too. So I started my social enterprise career when I was 21. And then, so I've only ever thought about trying to make money, but plus also help either the community I'm serving or the people who are involved with the project. So yeah, I've only ever had that headspace. And I would love to speak to more business people to see how they think. Maybe it's only about profits and money. But I don't know, what about you, Vadim?
My view is that social entrepreneurship is a broad spectrum, if you look at it. At the same time, social entrepreneurship has its own quite a distinctive niche. And I feel that social entrepreneurs are starting from social need, let's say. They're jumping on what communities require, community pain points are. This drives social entrepreneurs. Whereas, you know, for conventional businesses, it is still a commercial idea which comes first, and then, of course, values of the founder matter, whether they would like to leave legacy after themselves or whether they would like to contribute to their neighborhood or community or their sector or their profession would follow. So that's probably as separates. This is separating social entrepreneurship from conventional entrepreneurship.
And I suppose the thing that links them both is that entrepreneurs are always passionate. So they've always got a big idea. They're maybe not always business minded. They're more about thinking about how can I get my idea into action. And then so it's either the entrepreneurs who are doing it maybe for money, or no, any they might be doing it for anything. And then you've got the social entrepreneurs who'd like what you just said, it's about they found a community or a need in the community that needs to be addressed. And that's the thing that drives them. I think we're all a bit we're all a bit kooky as entrepreneurs. We've all got crazy minds. That's what you need. You need that kind of mind to get to the next stage of a crazy project.
Exactly.
Come back to your CV, if I may, Stefan. I mean, think about just those examples that I listed out at the start of the show. There's a clear need being met, isn't there? I remember the first time we spoke, and you telling me about the, you know, the wellies at Glastonbury, and that's such a simple idea at one level, but so impactful in a different way.
Yes, I mean, when I think back to that time, I was 21 years old. Probably it was 50% of the fact that I've been brought up to always like be kind and spread love and be helpful to the community, but also 50% of I wanted an excuse to go to festivals. So when I found the wellies, I had just quit uni for the second time, and I think I was scared of telling my parents that, so I went to Glastonbury. I stayed on at Glastonbury and I found all these wellies left behind, and I was like, there's something to be done with them. And it was not only the passion to not let these wellies go into landfill, but also the creative headspace of, well, I can make something out of these. So that's when I started making the products to then start selling them. And then it was all just an organic journey from that, because it wasn't like you never have all the answers to a project at the start. You just let it develop organically and allow creativity within yourself and the people supporting you. And then it generally, certainly turns into something, whether it's a successful something or just a learning curve.
Right. We are discussing how social entrepreneurship may be different from other types of entrepreneurship, and whether indeed there is a business case, right, for entrepreneurs. And there is, right? There is a very strong case, and you are jumping on opportunities where conventional entrepreneurs are kept blind in a way. They don't see it as a promising avenue, and where the government and local authorities are not performing their functions properly. But in your case, I think, Stefan, I think you try to combine element of fun, the element of entertainment, and the element of addressing very, very urgent and serious social need. And I think this is where the secret is. You have to strike the balance between what mainstream customers may want. They want things cheaper, they want things more convenient, they want to get fun and entertainment from services or products they are using. And if that comes with a social element, with the element of doing good, that completes the picture, essentially, as a social entrepreneur.
I think there's a really interesting point in the conversation so far about where you operate as a social entrepreneur, because is it just about, you know, finding those gaps that they're not being filled from a commercial perspective, they're not being met by government, but there is a social good here, and that's where we operate? Or is it driven by I guess I'm asking you, Stefan, somebody who's done this, is it driven by, you know, do you think like that? Do you just go, here's an opportunity, and it's just, it happens to be an opportunity that we would recognise as a social enterprise?
Yeah, well, I think from my own point of view, it's always done, I've always had the headspace of I want to help people. That's always been like within our family, and the way I've been brought up is, it's all about like sharing what you have, or sharing privilege, certainly. Where I've come from in terms of like being able to, the opportunity to recycle wellies, that was only through privilege of my parents being able to host me for a few months while I got the project off the ground, you know? And that was the headspace, or the freedom to be creative on that. There's two avenues that people could go down. It's either that they're either a business already, and then they think, oh, how can I actually involve the community, or how can I have more of a social impact? And then amend the business plan for that. Or it is like we were just discussing, that we see a need in the community for, or a gap in services or something, that then you then start a project from that. And so it means that anyone can become a social entrepreneur. it's about opening that your mindset towards that and thinking about not just the money but also society around us. Because I've been doing something interesting with my job at the moment, which, because my job is a social enterprise officer for a local CVC, so that's in Wales, so Community Voluntary Council, and in England I think it's a County Voluntary Services. Anyway, it's a charity that's in every county and we support like the third sector. So my job is to support the social enterprises in Pembrokeshire. And we've been doing using this thing called Social Value Engine. And it's fascinating to go into an organization and do their Social Value Engine report, where you break down everything that they do. And they often find that it's not just the clients or the beneficiaries that are gaining social value from their activities. They're thinking about, oh, there's actually volunteers, there's actually employees if they're treated ethically, there's also all of the stakeholders within that organization that has social value. And and then I think it's something really important for any organization to think about, like, what kind of impact can you have? Because you can have a positive social impact, you can also have a negative social impact. If you're doing like really like not very great things, then that domino effect of negative social impact is huge. But on the other side, you do some great things with your community or the people that are involved with the organization, and that can really lead on to other things. That can lead on to great, really strong community. It can lead on to people feeling better within themselves, and then that also then spreads out there, you know?
You are a serial entrepreneur, am I right?
Yeah, that's the first time I've read it. I've seen it like that, actually. So David described it as that. It was quite interesting to see. But I suppose I would, maybe that does make sense.
it might be coming from, you know, from academic literature. And normally, social entrepreneurs are more likely to be serial entrepreneurs due to the nature of opportunity. This is what literature says. I wonder whether we can validate it with your experience. It's essentially because social entrepreneurs are jumping from one problem to another, and it does not matter for them or for you what kind of issue to deal with, as long as you know the method.
That's quite true. I think, problem solving is the main part of, one of the big parts of being a social entrepreneur. You see a problem and then you want to solve it. And often it's a societal problem or something in the community that needs addressing. Yeah, serial entrepreneur, social entrepreneur. And I'm thinking now that all of my business partners who I still work with now, they're also serial entrepreneurs. I've been thinking about everything that they do. And even the organizations that I help in Pembrokeshire, I realize that they come to me with a new project every couple of weeks or every couple of months until something like sticks, and then they ride with it for maybe a couple of years until they can pass it on, or maybe the solution is addressed. But there's always this Rolodex of ideas in the brain, I suppose.
Brilliant.
I also wanted to ask, how much does location matter for you, the place where you are?
Well, I grew up in Pembrokeshire, and it's quite difficult to like start a business down here. And I technically didn't start the business down here. I started the business in Glastonbury Festival. So it was going to Glastonbury that led to my first social enterprise. And then any other business that we've set up down here, it is quite difficult if you haven't got a really strong community. Now, I've never set up a business in a built up area or a city, and I don't know what it's like then, but certainly down in Pembrokeshire in the rural areas, you need to rely on social media, you need to rely on a really good customer service so that you can keep your customer base strong and the community, because word of mouth is vital. It's probably the most important thing, if you as long as you keep people happy. And generally, if you're running a social enterprise, you're not often keeping people happy because you're addressing something in the community that's needed.
So yeah, I mean, that place-based piece is quite interesting, and I think that may be one of the distinguishing things for a social enterprise, because a lot of the social enterprises that we know and work with, you know, being part of a community, linked to community, and addressing a community need definitely seems part and parcel of it. I guess that's one of the distinguishing characteristics as well. I'm just cutting into the podcast to tell you a little bit about the offer that we have for businesses locally as part of the business and community engagement support. We have our Noise Transfer Network, that's regular networking events where you can come on campus, meet like-minded people, hear from some of our and leading industry experts. We have our Bradford Business Challenge projects, where we have students coming out and working with you and supporting the work that you do. We have our consultancy clinic, where we have students delivering on short-term small projects for businesses as well. There's also lots of ways that you can engage with and interact with our students as guest lecturers, as mentors on some of our entrepreneurship programs, and through involvement in the curriculum. And equally, from a research perspective, we can work with you on collaborative research. If you think there's something we can help with, please reach out to us at BACE, that's base BACE, at bradford.ac.uk. Thank you, and now back to the podcast. Can I shift our kind of, I want to loop back to something you said, really talk about your kind of current role, Stefan, and that was about, is this changing the way that other non-social enterprises think?
A lot of the businesses that I work with are maybe already social enterprises, but the ones that are becoming or wanting to be it, they are realizing within their own SME that they are running almost like a social enterprise. Maybe that not the legal structure is completely correct, you know, that they are still technically running for, as a profit organization, but small businesses, small family-run businesses, they're running as a social enterprise. They want to support their employees, they want to support themselves as the people who are running it, and rarely are there shareholders that are, you know, wanting to affect the outcome of the business, which is mainly, yeah, that's how I believe social enterprises are. They don't have shareholders to impact too much on what the activities are, because then that takes away from the social side, because it's, they're always going to think about profit.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. There are some interesting findings coming from my own research, which is related to slightly different domain, the domain of sharing economy. And again, there is a spectrum of companies which are working over there. Some are starting from social mission, from the message of reducing carbon footprint, and this is very strong in their mission, and it is very strong in the way they operate and in the way they promote their services. And the others are prioritizing making profit, taking a transaction cut, etc. And what we can see that those who started from green promises realize that at some point that they have to give the way to more commercial thinking in order to succeed, in order to go beyond initial and early adopters. And the other way around, those who started from those, you know, commercial priorities are realizing that long term, in order to be sustainable, in order to claim their market, they actually have to broaden their message. So from both extremes of that continuum, they're moving and converging to the middle ground. Definitely. And it is happening. And it is happening not just because of government regulation. It's happening because the consumers, the customers are changing their attitude to society and the environment.
Yeah, would you back that up, Stefan? Are you seeing a changing mindset generally? I mean, you're very embedded in this space as it is.
Well, yeah, I agree what you just said. People are changing the way they spend their money. I mean, it's difficult because there was a movement of people wanting to spend their money more ethically, but also then there's the people having less money to spend. So it's about making sure that going into a social enterprise business, you're all also competitive of what you can sell. And yeah, I think that's the challenge at the moment. And we found that as a challenge on the community farm, that we were doing veg boxes, and then to be a really ethical social enterprise, it was really difficult to make a profit on, or certainly something like veg. And then we had to diversify into other things. So I think it's about always having that different sources of revenue and making sure that nearly all your revenue sources are competitive. And then also, like what Vladimir said about the society changing the way they spend their money and supporting organizations that do care. Because I think people are just understanding that the way you spend your money can affect people in a positive way, like organizations and how they run.
That's great. I mean, that links into another question, so I'll throw it in there as well, about the economic climate. You know, interest rates have come down, but they're still high, and they're going to be high for probably another 2-3 years. We've all got less effective spending power than we had a couple of years ago, effectively. I just wonder how that economic climate affects social enterprises and people's willingness to engage with social enterprises. Now, you've already suggested that that's making life potentially challenging, Stefan.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, and then on not only that people have got less money to spend, but local authorities have got less money to spend. The NHS have got less money to spend. And what's been happening in certainly my neck of the woods is that services have been cut by local authority, and then the third sector trying to jump in there to replace these services or fill in the gap, because of all these people are really passionate and they want to make change and they want to use their sources of revenue to help people. But often it requires grants to get those kind of projects off the ground, and the problem is there's services being cut plus less grants available. And yeah, it's a very interesting sector at the moment, and I hope that it's going to change soon, because projects do need that seed money to get going. But yeah, I'm waiting for more seed money to come through to get it going. But it's all about putting the belief in something innovative. And you know what, fair play to a lot of the local authorities. They sometimes can, they're opening their eyes up into more imaginative ways of doing things, and maybe seeing that, maybe putting a plaster on a open wound rather than thinking about the preventative things to make that wound happen, you know. And hopefully that will carry on like that. They'll keep on thinking more creatively and supporting these social entrepreneurs that might be able to provide the cheaper and preventative solution.
Absolutely. There is another school of thought claiming that this difficult climate can actually encourage innovation and creativity. Do you see it like that from your end?
Yeah, I've seen that in the last couple of months, actually. Some of the services have been cut around here that the third sector have been coming in and wanting, they've got some ideas and they go, well, we want to do this now because it's not being provided by the statutory bodies, you know?
And do you think from the customer point of view, from the customer base, from your consumers' point of view, do you think it might be the same situation in a way? Because being sustainable, being frugal does make sense under these, you know, challenging economic conditions. Would they, and that would help encourage a better uptake, just ordinary people, community members participating in social entrepreneurship initiatives.
Yes, I mean, yeah, you're totally right there. When things get a bit tougher, people, yeah, are more imaginative, and they also get together a bit more. Do you remember in the pandemic, everyone was getting together, communities were getting together, not physically, but supporting each other. And I think, yeah, that definitely happens in humanity, where things start to get a bit tough. And what you think naturally as animals, you go, oh, we're gonna take all the things and bring them together. But most of the community are gonna go, actually, I've got things, let's share them out. And it might be that with this cost of living crisis that people are maybe going to be thinking more like, how can I spend my money ethically that's going to support others? For instance, with in the food market, like in the growing veg, we noticed that although it might cost more money to buy veg, if you teach people how to cook and create really nutritious meals, not only are you eating well, which obviously makes us feel better because food is medicine, but also people might be able to actually save money because it is actually cheaper than buying a ready meal from the supermarket. However, there's also people got less time as well because everyone's working way too much to make ends meet. So there's also that side of things too. Have we got the headspace to always think ethically of how we spend our money because we're all working harder than we were before to bring the money in?
I think there's an interesting tension playing out. I've not quite thought about it this way before. I mean, one of the things that we saw in the research we did during COVID was lots of firms shortening supply chains, you know, and looking for local suppliers because you know, the challenges of being able to source internationally during the COVID period and being let down and some of the kind of issues that kind of created. So that immediately becomes more sustainable because we're putting less air miles on and freight miles on things that we do. There's an intention between that and the community engagement and the value that you create locally, but also the cost base for that. Now, the experience was in COVID, people were willing to bear the cost base of, you know, the product locally might cost more, but the value in working locally was much better. To what extent that might still be the case as the kind of the cost pressures come through the kind of the current climate. But I think you're right, Stephen. I think people are still supporting that kind of local mindset.
Yes, yeah, certainly. And then with more, if when people volunteer as well, I've noticed that if you volunteer on a project, you get to speak to others about what they're doing, and then the network grows. So, if anyone's got any headspace or time for volunteering, I say go for it, because volunteers are the thing that keeps the third sector going, and also it brings people together.
Great, definitely. How do we convince the skeptics, those that don't think businesses should be having a social kind of mindset and thinking in these terms?
Well, I think the best way to convince them is just to give a few examples to show it makes sense to be more sustainable, to be environmentally friendly, to be socially responsible. I gave an example of human resource at the beginning of our conversation. People in your organization, in your place, is the main source of ideas and creativity. So if you treat them and approach them with respect, if you understanding their needs and aspirations, that would open up huge amount of opportunities for your organization internally and externally. So I do, and this makes sense, and this totally makes sense. And I think this is probably sometimes, you know, we do see it as a challenge when people talk about sustainability development goals, and these goals are viewed as something which is very external to us, or it's in another piece of regulation coming, and we have to cope with that. I think the mindset, the approach has to change. And every sustainable development goal has to be checked in a way from the point of view whether it does make sense or it doesn't make sense. On most occasions it would have sense, but it may not have some. For some organizations, you know, different contexts exist and it could partially have a sense. But as long as you can connect it to your organizational practice.
I totally agree. And it's so funny how you mentioned about creativity, because I had put down a few notes before this, and one of them was, how do you encourage other organizations to become more socially and sustainable in their entrepreneurship? And it was allow creativity and bring people into the conversation, because it's not just the leaders that are the ones with the bright ideas, it's everyone involved. So yeah, like you said, if you bring people in and allow creativity to happen, you can amazing like projects can come off the ground, and the money saving tactics, and also increasing social value tactics. So yeah, I think bringing people into the conversation and being open to the community that business runs in, so that might be the staff or the stakeholders or yeah, anyone that's involved.
So I know, Stephanie, you've talked a little bit about this already, but in terms of that encouraging creativity and awareness, what roles do you and your organizations take in promoting and driving social and sustainable entrepreneurship?
Well, my current role as social enterprise development officer in the local CBC in Wales, that's a huge part of our job, which is to encourage more innovative thinking, more projects that have social impact. And then also within the farm that I'm a director of, we've just moved from a 2-acre farm to a 130-acre farm, and we're trying to encourage as many people to bring their ideas as possible, because we've got this blank canvas almost for people to come in and share their ideas and maybe start their own projects, or invoke the fact that people can achieve things with very little, because the things that have been achieved with on the farm is incredible. The small amount of money that we've had to what we've got to now, anything's possible. Same with the wellies, actually. I didn't have any money to do that, but in the end, 20,000 wellies were recycled. So it's all about making sure that people feel empowered and encouraged to start their ideas and go forth with them.
From my perspective, we are trying to do it through research, through uncovering certain patterns in my area. My area is academic entrepreneurship. What makes us academics translate our knowledge to the outside world? And I spent quite considerable time trying to destroy certain stereotypes about the impact we are delivering for the economy and society. And you may know, normally it is sciences, hard sciences, which are associated with making an impact for society. And social sciences and arts are normally not viewed as disciplines that are making impact for the rest of the world. And a huge part of my research was about changing that perception. And I was doing it by collecting hard data from academics. And the results were amazing. So it was what we realized, that it's not that perception about social sciences being not sufficiently engaged with society, well, was mainly due to metrics which have been used by academic sector in the past. So it was just about metrics rather than actual things we are doing. So this is one way we are trying to make an impact. Another is through developing new programs.
I'm gonna be even more explicit than that, because I thought you were gonna go there and didn't quite get there. And that's part of the ethos, isn't it? We're launching a new program here, Stefan. MSc Entrepreneurship in Practice. That's going to be up and running by the autumn, and it is all about boots on the ground, getting involved. Not sitting in classrooms learning about what it means to be an entrepreneur, but actually developing and building your own business. And the students that we've got now, and the interest in that program is as much about social entrepreneurship as it is about, air quote, conventional entrepreneurship. I'm not sure that the students and a lot of the applicants necessarily see a difference. They start from a perspective of, I want to set up a business that's going to do good.
Absolutely. But what was amazing from interviews which we have so far, that probably most of ideas students are coming with to our program informed by social needs. So they try to make money, but what they have at the back of their mind is a significant social issue they try to resolve. And I think, that sounds and that looked very promising for us in that respect.
What you just said, Vadim, I was just thinking how something that came to my mind about when you're running a project, if you've just got profits or just got money at the forefront, most of the time there's always going to be really difficult times with money in a business, and you have to go through that tough time to get to the next stage. But when you're running a social enterprise, you've also got all of those other aspects. You've got the community, you've got the people you're helping, and that motivation and drive to get through the difficult times is huge, because there's been really tough times in all the projects that I've run, and it was obviously thinking about the money, but also thinking about all of the community and all the people we're helping, and that really drives you forward, especially when you're having the worst day you can imagine. But then you think, oh, actually, we are having an impact, not just filling up pockets with money,
Absolutely, brilliant. Absolutely.
So if we're thinking about practical advice, takeaways for organisations, individuals who are seeking to engage more in this space in terms of social and sustainable enterprise and innovation, what would you suggest they do? How can you start?
So there's a few places. First of all, have a look at Social Enterprise UK. That is a one-stop shop for loads of information. So Social Enterprise UK is always a good one. And then I would also say the local CVCs or CVSs, as they're called in England. Most of them have got a team, like a third sector support team, that would help with governance. They'll help you with maybe finding that seed money that you need to start a project. They'll also show you all the networks and people that are already doing similar things, or in the county where you can go and meet them, because most of the time social entrepreneurs want to help other social entrepreneurs. So, I mean, I suppose because I work for a CVC, I'm obviously going to be biased towards it, but they are really helpful to getting those projects off the ground and finding that small pot of money that you might need, or finding the community that you need to speak to get it off the ground.
And I'm wondering in this respect, How do you find this experience bridging the gap between social entrepreneurs and conventional businesses or established companies? What is the main mechanism for bridging them together and finding common ground?
I think it's demystifying this whole not-for-profit, you know, title, or thinking that social enterprises is just charity, or that they, you know, that they haven't got profits in mind. Because in my eyes, every business needs to have a source of revenue and needs to have that money coming in to become sustainable. So yeah, it's removing that thing that not-for-profit is bad, whereas actually all it is just removing the shareholders from a business and then making you spend the money within your community, within the organization. So demystifying it, certainly. And then also maybe like allowing people to think, if there's a person who's running a business, allowing them to think what already they're doing that has social impact, and seeing the value of that, and then seeing if they can work on that further to increase their social value and their social responsibility.
Yeah, I've never liked the phrase not-for-profit, because it's not that you don't want to make a surplus. It's just what you do with that surplus that's the difference,
exactly,
isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Brilliant. One final question then, just to close off, which is a bit of a change of pace. So we're asking all of our contributors this. So who is your management hero? That could be personal, professional, the person who's inspired or influenced you most in your own career. Stefan.
So mine is someone called Samantha Minas. And 12 years ago, when I had this crazy idea about the wellies, I went to an organization called Unlimited, and they offered me a small pot of money and a mentor. And this mentor was Samantha Minas. And she was the one that decided that, without a business plan or whatever, she just liked my energy and my ideas. And she's like, here's some money. Here's, I think it was like $3,000 at the time. And then from meeting her, she then linked me up with another award winner called Dairy Reed, and we set up a restaurant together. And then another award winner who I set up the community farm together. And this Samantha Minas, we've known each other for 12 years, and now she works in the local authority as the social enterprise officer. So we both work together now on encouraging future social entrepreneurs to thrive in the county. And without her, none of this would have happened.
And for me, It is a collective of people, and I was fortunate enough to be surrounded by very inspiring figures and supportive figures with big heart and sometimes big ego, but no, academics do need it. I would say Professor Marcial Echenique, who is it's professor in land use at the University of Cambridge. And he changed my life, my career. And he did exactly what I was again referring before. He looked at people's potential. He listened to everybody, and he tried to unpack that creativity within you and give you confidence. And that changed my attitude. It also, I tried to replicate in a way his practice in my own practice with my students. And in terms of management or management person or management hero, I would say there is a very famous phrase, I think, which is attributed to different marketing scholars, that your customers don't need a drill. They need a hole which is made by your drill. But this phrase, if you think, has a revolutionary impact on the way you approach the surrounding world, whether it is commercial world or social, entrepreneurial world. Community needs or your customer comes first. And I saw transformation in my attitude to many things in academic and non-academic world, but it was even more rewarding to see how this particular phrase transforms mindset of my students and how they come up with absolutely different ideas once they realize it's not just, you know, a particular product or, let's say, table or chair. It's about function, about usefulness of the service provided by that product. And as I say, it is easily translatable across across different types of enterprises. But I think the phrase itself, I think it belongs to Drucker or Levitt. I think it is contested.
Brilliant. Thank you both for your contributions, your insights and your input. I've really enjoyed the kind of the conversation. If people would like to reach out to you, to contact you direct, how can they find you, Stefan?
So at the moment, I'm a director of a farm called Glasbren. And so if you type in Glasbren into Google, Glasbren, you should find us. It means sapling in Welsh. And we in our next stage of a huge growth of our farm. So yeah, you can contact me on there. And yeah, we've got a crowdfunder campaign coming soon because we've gone from a 3-acre farm, 2-acre farm to a 130-acre farm. And yeah, we need all the support we can get. And like I said earlier, it's all about word of mouth to get projects like in rural places off the ground.
Brilliant, thank you. Vadim?
Fantastic, it's easier to find me. You just type University of Bradford School of Management and you look at stuff and you can search for my name, Vadim, and my email will be available.
Brilliant, thank you both. In terms of reaching out directly to us, if you're on social media, it's at Dave P. Spicer, or for the school, it's at Brad Management. If you want to email us about the podcast direct, it's BACE, that stands for Business and Community Engagement, BACE@bradford.ac.uk. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe, please leave us a 5-star review and press that like button, because we like to have that affirmation on the social media and on the kind of podcast platforms as well. Again, thank you both very much indeed. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you've got a project that you'd love to get done, but you're struggling with the time and resources to do that, that's something that we can help you with. Bradford Business Challenge projects are where we get our students to do, as part of their dissertation, a piece of applied management work for a business like yourselves. Either one of our final year undergraduate or MSc students, with the support of an academic mentor, will be able to work on that project for you. There's no cost for you as a business. All we ask for you is to set up with us that project, give us a kind of outline brief that the student will go away and work into a full proposal for you, and then you'll be meeting and liaising with them and their academic advisor to get that project delivered. Because we have multiple students doing these over the course of the year, there's usually a group of students looking for any project at one time. So if that's something that you're interested in and you'd like to know more about, please reach out to us at BACE, base@bradford.ac.uk.